Hi, this is Eric Severson, totally excited to be here on Business Leader Series with Derek Champagne. Oh my gosh, I'm excited about this. I've got a book coming out in July, so the timing is perfect. Got a lot of great things going on with helping people, and I just can't wait to be on the show and talk to you listeners about it.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now,
welcome to the
let's
Business
begin
Leadership
today's
series, where
Leadership
our goal
Series
is to inspire
interview.
You to become the best leader that you can be. We've got an awesome guest today, Eric Severson. He's a writer, a speaker, adventurer, educator, and the author of this new and upcoming book called Ordinary to Extraordinary. Eric, welcome to our show today.
Thanks, Derek. It's great to be here.
You've got quite a story. You're world traveled, quite an adventure that you've had in your life from your career and your personal life. So let's start and go back to the beginning and let's hear about some of your early days and then what got you to where you are today.
Okay, so I'm an absolutely average person. I grew up in a suburb of Tacoma, Washington called Parkland, and got, you know, C minus average in grades in grade school, and ended up doing much better in college, graduated near the top of my class at UCLA, but it took me a while to get there. And you know what? A lot of people told me, being an average kid with a cowlick that I was embarrassed about, you know, a little bit awkward growing up. And like I said, I didn't study very diligently when I was young. And not everybody provided all the great support, like, hey, dude, go charge out and make this world your place. In fact, one person literally said, this is my high school counselor in my exit interview for school. What schools are you going to go to was mainly the thing for most people. And so I said, you know what, I want to go to UCLA. And she literally leaned over, pushed herself away from the desk and said, you'll never get into a school like that. And so I applied and I was promptly rejected. But that didn't stop me either. I didn't listen to her and I didn't listen to UCLA saying I couldn't come. So I went to community college for 2 years, excelled and got into UCLA and really, really engaged with it and learned a lot from it and went on. So then I just chased opportunities that were different, and that brought me around the world to over 80 countries. I've started 3 companies as well, and done some really things that I consider extraordinary. And so that's where what the name of the book is Ordinary to Extraordinary, because I believe anybody can do great, extraordinary things if they just choose to do them and work hard towards it, of course, too.
I love to hear stories of the underdog. I love to hear the stories of what you call a regular or average person doing things. Those are my favorite stories because most of our listeners can relate to that. And most of us feel that way, right? At some time or another. So tell me, I want to hear a little bit more though. Tell me a little bit more about your travel and some of the things that you learned. I mean, you traveled over 80 countries around the world, 49 of the 50 states. Tell me about some other things that you learned from different people, as well as having the time to think of some of the driving forces as you traveled.
Well, Derek, I think you just nailed it when you said two things. Traveled around meeting people is one, and then time to think. I think those are two critical things that a lot of people miss. And you don't have to go to 80 countries to get it. You can meet interesting people right in your own town. But we, especially with the busyness of, you know, being connected electronically and running around with between jobs and if you have kids with the kids, I think not enough people really take that time to spend serious time alone. And that's when we examine ourselves and we find out those deep embedded cravings that we've got to do things that we don't even know are there until we take time for ourselves. But so for my travels, I've done some crazy ones. I studied anthropology as an undergrad at UCLA, and then also at grad school, and that took me to South America. The first time I studied a group called the Aluku in French Guyana, Suriname, and then the second time I went down, these are 3 months each, I went deeper into the forest and worked with a tribe called the Wayana, a group of Amerindians. And I was the first non-Indian some of them had ever seen. They still hunt with a bow and arrow. They're semi-nomadic. And so that was a definite, you know, eye-opener as far as different cultures that are out there. And hitchhiked from London to Zaire. That was even before South America. Got a job in Japan at a Green River College, opened a branch campus there in 1989. And I went over there to work, and I was the same age as students, but I had the privileges of an employee. So that was loads of fun. Boxed in Thailand for a little bit and taught English in Paris, Thailand, and Japan, including that trip I mentioned. And so it's just been literally seeing opportunities and chasing them. And the first big one was Africa. And nobody, again, I wasn't privileged in any way. I didn't say, hey, mom and dad, I want to go to Africa. I'm 19 at the time. I want to go to Africa. And they wrote me a big check and said, have fun, and patted me on the bum, and off to Africa I go. I said, I want to go to Africa. They said, no. I spent 8 months doing two things, mowing lawns and convincing them why I should be able to go. And in the end, I raked enough money to get a ticket to London and had little left. So I hitchhiked down from London through Spain, crossed Gibraltar into Morocco, and ended up in Central Africa.
Wow. I mean, you've had quite a journey, and it's incredible. Tell us about the mind, body, and spirit connection.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, I think everybody kind of intuitively knows that there are those things. But what we don't do is we don't consciously, I think, try and do healthy things for the mind, body, and spirit. And I think all three are very, very important. I meditate every morning for my mind. I go to church. I believe in God. I think that's a big driving force in what I have done in my life and the joy I feel in life. I meditate every single morning. And with that, I thank God for all the great things here. I thank people that are around me. I really just envision my future. I think about what my future is going to be like. I envision my perfect day. If I have to forgive somebody, I do that. And I ask forgiveness. So every morning I go through a little 15-minute guided meditation routine. And those are some of the things that take care of my mind and spirit both. The body, I've done martial arts for a very long time, and even as much as it doesn't have to be martial arts, walking the track. If I drop my kids off at soccer practice, instead of just sitting there and watching them for an hour, I'll walk the track for an hour and keep my body moving. And I really think most of my best thoughts, if not a lot of my best thoughts, have come by doing exercise, whether it be in a gym, at a track, jogging, or climbing a mountain or something. And just getting the blood flowing and the juices flowing really contributes to my thoughts. And for my mind, I need to keep that focused by list taking and keeping priorities straight. So I devote time to all three of those aspects. And I think it helps keep me moving forward in a direction that I like. Mm.
I mean, you've had a very interesting life, and again, going from flunking or not doing well in school early on, and then going back and getting your master's and doing well in school, and then I see here that you've ridden a motorcycle on 6 continents. That's awesome. Yeah. Cross the USA on one twice.
Yep.
You've summited the highest mountains of 8 countries and 5 states. How do you pull all this together? You talk about all those things, and it seems like you were out there experiencing life to the fullest. Bring it back for our listeners who may be in a cubicle or an entrepreneur who's going, man, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Bring it all back for us and say, what are some of the driving factors and the big things, the biggest things that you've learned along the way that we can apply?
Yep. So one of the things is, I think, just when I am at work, I'm focused on that, and I really enjoy that. But I do. When I'm laying in bed, I'll dream about time I get to get away to get into the mountains, and it just keeps me excited to get to the next day. And also, I think it's important that there are people who are in situations where they're doing jobs that aren't necessarily pleasant. I've had jobs that are not pleasant. I actually love my jobs right now. I go to bed excited to wake up the next day to do them, but that hasn't always been the case. I've like I said, I've mowed lawns. I've done delivery trucks for semis from 1 a.m. till 11 a.m. and things like that. And I think it's important, again, this is where kind of the mindset comes in, to don't look at it as a job. What's your job? Oh, my job is to take big boxes off of a semi and take it into Burger King, which is one of the company I was delivering for at the time and a long time ago. That's not the job. My job is providing cheap meals for people who are hungry and maybe make their lives a little bit better that day. There's an anecdote from a book, The Power of Meaning, where there's a janitor during the NASA glory days. And so when asked what his job was, he didn't say, I clean toilets and take out the trash. He said, I help put people in outer space. No, I help take people to the moon, I think is what he said. Wow. So he looked at his job as something very important, and it really is. It's that important. And if we just realize that, it makes mundane jobs seem a lot better.
Have you always had that perspective, or was there a time when you remember a light bulb going off and going, you know what, this could be a different experience? Or has that just been always been your mindset?
Okay, no, it definitely has not. I've always, whenever I've worked, even when I was a poor student, whenever I worked, I took it 110% seriously. Mm-hmm. One of my accomplishments that I'm very, very proud of is, you mentioned all the different places I've lived, so I've moved around a lot. Almost every time when I moved between 17 and 30 years old, when I moved, I had no job lined up. So I'd arrive at a place with nothing go. So what I did, first thing I did is I'd go to the temporary job agency and write my name down. And then I'd get on a list to get jobs the next morning. And then I'd also start applying for jobs I really wanted. So big jobs, like teaching at a university, for example. So every single company that hired me as a temp for a day offered to buy my contract and keep me on as a full-time employee. And it's not something inherently about me. It's just that I chose to treat that job like it was the best thing in the world, and I did my best at it, whether it be sweeping a floor or unloading trucks.
I love that. And I love that mentality. I can relate to, I've had a few jobs in my day as well back in the day. And I always had a curiosity about them. And I don't know that I was flipping it the way that you have, but I always thought, you know, someday I might recall this or need it in a different way. I always thought that way. And it's amazing how years later, how those things start to stack up and they become relevant even later on, even some small job you might've done, if you go into it with a certain mindset.
Absolutely, Derek. And actually, I didn't quite answer your question. Was there something that clicked, and what did I know about this all along? Kind of, there was. There was a moment when I was about 23 or 24, and I'm working up in Alaska doing construction, and I'm washing some truck parts in a big tub of diesel. And so as I just saw my reflection in this black tub of diesel liquid, I just something, the cool feeling on my hands from as it evaporated when I took it out of this tub. I saw my reflection and something said to me, this is an amazing job. And it was just, again, an ordinary job, but it was amazing. And I loved that moment. I loved my job. I loved being in Alaska. I worked up there just during the summer for two summers. And that kind of was the first time that I realized doing simple things can be beautiful, but it wasn't until much later that I read a book called The Power of Meaning. I mentioned it before, by Emily Esfahani Smith. And that book talks about what is meaningful in our lives. And she kind of breaks it down to belonging is one pillar of meaning. Storytelling is one. Transcendence is one. And purpose is another. And when I read that book, it all kind of clicked together why I have a happy life. I knew I had a happy life, but I never knew exactly why. And that kind of defined why I saw in my life where I had belonging, where I had transcendental experiences that affected me. That diesel experience was one, for example. And so that helped me define it.
I love it. What application do you have to somebody? And one example that makes me think of also is this book, Deep Work, if you've read that, by Cal Newport. And he talks about the person making the sword, the craftsman, and that they're not trying to do that and then move to the next thing. Their pride is in making that the best it can be. And they're there working the iron and moving it. And that's what they do. And someone with a personality like mine can tend to want to jump from the next thing or say, great, now what's next? Well, then what's next? And instead of sitting there and just soaking in the job that you're doing and really appreciating and seeing the significance it has on the world around you. Any other advice for someone that's in a position right now and saying, you know what other mindset can I think of here to help me enjoy or to look for something that's more meaningful?
Yeah, I agree. I think there are certain things you're going to find that you're going to want to stick with it. Like you said, so music, Derek, I kind of just saw that you were heavily involved in music. What was your main instrument?
Bass guitar.
All right. So if you would have jumped to drums, to piano, and of course, people who are good at music often are good at all of them. But I think in music, it's one of those things that if you really, really focus on something, you can become top of the top of the top. And if you jump around is also fun too, but it takes that level of focus. And if you find your job that you're absolutely passionate about, I think that treating it like that this is the thing that I really want to focus. And if I'm in something that is maybe satisfying to a degree, but doesn't make me want to go to work every day, I would certainly start orchestrating things so that I could get to that position, whether it be taking more classes at night, whether it be getting coaches. And I'm a strong believer in coaches. I think it's really funny how incestuous the coaching world is, I think, where I pay people for coaching all the time. People pay me for coaching all the time. And there are instances where it's so funny how I will pay A will pay B, and B will pay me. And it's just funny. And it's great, though, because we're all making each other better with the different skills we come with.
Thanks for sharing that. I got to tell you that there was many years for me, and I've been open about it on the show, where I was the old school entrepreneur that held my cards close. There wasn't the old days before being an entrepreneur was cool. That's stating how old I am, because it's very cool now. It's very sexy and cool now.
Yeah, right.
But back then it wasn't as much, and you held your cards close. It wasn't really this big collaboration and it's seed funding and all these things. It was more you don't show your competitor. You do it well. You hide. You know, keep your proprietary. And there's still a level of that. But one day, and it took me way too darn long to figure it out, but one day I did realize I needed coaching and mentorship, and that was life changing for me, because I just didn't know what I didn't know. And and how else would I find that out? And I was just making the same mistakes and trying to figure things out that I just would not have gotten to. Have you always been open to coaching? I know you're a coach as well, but was there a time for you when you realized this is going to just shave years of guesswork and frustration and mistakes?
No, it's actually relatively new. I've had coaches for sports and in martial arts and things for a long time. But as far as business goes, it's probably about 3 years ago is when I really started making a transition. I went into English as a second language as a job, I'll say, slash career. I taught for 10 years, and my last one I was teaching at UCLA Extension, English as a second language. And then I came to this realization that, oh my gosh, my life is great. I've got great students, great colleagues, great school I'm working for, but I can't afford to raise a family in LA on my teaching salary. So I was forced out of my calling, and I had to make one of the first practical decisions of my life where I left teaching, went into business. And I did it begrudgingly, but I absolutely loved it. So I did business for 10 years. And then I realized I want to bring this full circle, and I want to use all of these entrepreneurial success formulas and business strategies in education. So then I started thinking about creating the company Language Link. And that's exactly what I do, is I use everything from Brendon Burchard to Tony Robbins to all these other, you know, high level coaches. And then think people like David Brownlee, who's just down in San Diego and he's up and coming. Adam Flores is another up and coming coach. And surrounding myself by these people, and it really was a necessary step to make this company come to fruition, because I was beating myself, like you said, you're beating yourself up trying to make mistakes over and over again. Right. Derek, I guarantee you figured a lot of things out, but it might have taken way longer than it could have.
Right. And yeah, thank you. Thanks for sharing.
And same thing for me. Yeah.
Well, and you also shared that you had coaches for other things. So those that haven't had a coach, but yet you'll have a coach for a mentor for martial arts and for whatever sports you're playing. It just makes sense that you're going to have that for another specialty in your professional life. And even in your personal life, I've got a health coach. We meet virtually on FaceTime 3 times a week and work out, because I needed that accountability. And so it was a good fit for me.
So, and it's funny, because sometimes I say to myself, oh my gosh, I'm paying this person good money for them to tell me what I already know. However, I know deep inside, I would not have done what they said. And sometimes they tell me things I wouldn't have ever thought too, but sometimes they'll say common sense things, and it's still valuable to me, because they're, like you said, they're keeping me accountable. They're keeping me focused and things like that. And that's good. And then again, there are the other times where I'm just mind blown, and they open up something that I don't think I would have ever thought of without, you know, 15 years of study.
Yeah, I love that. You know, in my particular line of work, we see these common crisis points usually in marketing and from startups to household brands sometimes. And, you know, with over 1,000 brands we reviewed, we have a good understanding of what the common pitfalls are and how to avoid them. And so for us, when we go in and look under the hood, we can shave 4 or 5 years of guesswork sometimes. That's what a coach can do for you as well in the different areas of your life and your profession when that's their specialty. And
why absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. It's a great service you're doing.
Hey, tell me a little bit about Language Link.
Okay, yeah, so it's funny because it's evolved kind of quickly into something different from what I thought it would be. I really wanted to give back more and do something where I feel like I'm making even a sliver of a contribution to the world. So my goal is to teach English strategies, not necessarily just the language, to students coming from Japan, from Brazil, from Colombia, from Russia, students who are coming to the United States to study and doing workshops abroad as well. I've got one in Thailand coming up. And it was for students to succeed in English, but it wasn't trying to compete with what they're learning in their English classrooms. There are a lot of good language schools and colleges and universities that already do a good job teaching English, but you know what? A lot of them miss strategies on how these students can succeed. I use neuro-linguistic programming to let them show how much more language is inside their brain than they think. Giving them confidence in English, spending an hour with somebody, getting them more confident in English, I think is a lot better than teaching them how to conjugate verbs for the 20th time. And so I really wanted to focus this company on the outside of the classroom strategies, but my client base very quickly evolved into business professionals who contacted me saying that they needed help English for their careers. And so I said, sure, I'll help you. That's great. My company actually started out called ESL Bootcamp. Then I got all the business professionals. So I did a DBA of Language Link. And then the funny thing is these business professionals who were contacting me and I start coaching them, about 6 weeks in, it usually is how long it takes for me to say, if I can be honest with you, it's not English. And they're usually high intermediate level, sometimes advanced in English. I said, English is not your biggest problem or your biggest weakness. You're struggling in your career. And these are usually managers, et cetera, often because of management skills. So if you want, I'll work with you on management skills and business strategy. So in the end, after I work with somebody for a while, it's often 60% business strategy and management skill and 40% English.
Wow.
If not 100% business.
Wow. But it starts, yeah. It starts with the other way around as far as the perceived need.
Yeah, exactly. Cause they're using English cause maybe they have an accent. Maybe they don't know it perfectly as their excuse for not doing as well in their career, but it's not that. And they really, I've seen some great breakthroughs with my students. I call them students. It's almost like friends as I'm coaching them, but yeah, it's been great. And that has evolved into some public speaking and things which I really enjoy as well.
That's awesome. Man, thank you so much. I want to take a minute. We've got a few minutes left and I want to talk about your book. So let's lay out some basic principles and premises for ordinary to extraordinary.
Okay. So it started out just as me writing down stories about my life. I've got one from hitchhiking, you know, incidents of hitchhiking. I've had a gun in my mouth in Nigeria, for example, and that was pretty scary. I've had knives pulled on me two or three times. I lived with the Indians and I had some interesting experiences with them. Lived in Paris, had a girlfriend in Paris, and that was a wonderful experience. So it started off with me writing these between 3 and 12 page narratives of my life just for myself. A few friends started reading them and they really dug them. So I decided I'm going to really polish this up. So I ended up writing 42 of them. And then I had what I thought was considered a done book. It was just these little stories of my life. And then an editor, I'm so happy I got in touch with this person, said, this is great for you and your friends. However, if you want it to be a book that more people can relate to, you need to structure this into a bigger meaning. So I had, I read that book, The Power of Meaning by Emily S. Fonney Smith. I structured all of these 42 essays or narratives of my life into the four categories of belonging, purpose, transcendence, and storytelling, and divided them up. And I showed how I found meaning in my life through these things, even though I didn't know about these pillars when it was happening. And then it's a very interactive book where I want to, at the end of every chapter, one chapter is about somebody that I used to ride with dying on a motorcycle. I used to be heavily involved with the outlaw bike clubs, and we rode really hard all the time, and it didn't end well one night. I want somebody to be able to identify how do we get past that. Another instance would be meeting somebody that I had one night of just this great communication, platonic friendship with somebody that was just so beautiful. And then I want the reader to be able to ask themselves, who is somebody that I connected with, a stranger randomly, that is no longer part of my life? And how did that affect me? How did that make my life better, maybe different? So it's kind of an interactive, fun book of adventurous narratives. And like I said, a lot of fun adventure.
That sounds really cool. And are you the business director of business development for Eagle Rider as well?
Yep. Exactly. So I've been,
that's incredible. Yeah. Tell me about the growth that you've helped with that company as well.
So I actually had my own company called Ride Free Motorcycle Tours. That was growing pretty quickly, but I decided I wanted to, and I was renting motorcycles. It's motorcycle rentals and tours is what the company does. Mm-hmm. And I decided, I saw Eagle Rider's growth and something spectacular was happening. Jeff Brown and Chris McIntyre are the founders and owners and just super amazing guys. And I was seeing something magical happening. So I wanted to be part of it, joined on. That was 11 or 12 years ago. And then I sold my company because I was devoting so much time to Eagle Rider. And that my company is still doing great under the hands of somebody else. And then for Eagle Rider, it was just, you know, when people say, if you think it can happen, the whole power of attraction, all these great things, the owners of Eagle Rider proved it. So with the help of some people in the company, but you know, with them forging the way, they helped that company grow double digits often over and over and over. And it took a big investment, over $100 million a little over a year ago. And very, very exciting. They proved the American dream. And I had multiple roles in that company throughout the 12 years that I've been there. And I really like it.
Wow. Man,
And part of it is we provide dreams for people on bikes. We have people come from Germany or Europe or Brazil, and they ride motorcycles here and they live life of James Dean for 2 weeks and it changes their life. I've seen bikers literally crying saying, and it's not all bikers, it's travel people crying and saying, this is the best trip of my life. I've been dreaming about this since I was a kid.
Wow. Man, Eric, thank you so much for being our guest. How do our listeners learn more about you? Where can they go to learn more about your projects and in your book?
So I think the easiest kind of springboard for all of these things, there are links to Eagle Rider, links to Language Link, links to ESL Bootcamp from my main site, which is ericseverson.com. And Derek, for your listeners, I'll go ahead and make a landing page, which is ericseverson.com/leadership. And you can get half off my book. And there are a few other free things, some pictures of me riding motorcycles and climbing mountains and things like that, if anybody's interested. And my name also, it's E-R-I-K. S-E-V-E-R-S-E-N. Two ways you can spell it wrong, but yeah, ericseverson.com/leadership.
ericseverson.com/leadership. Thank you so much. It's very kind of you to do that. There's an opportunity to pre-order the book. If you go to that, that's again, Severson, S-E-V-E-R-S-E-N. We'll put links in the show notes. And man, that's very kind of you. Really excited about this book, Ordinary to Extraordinary. And congratulations on all your success. What a fascinating life and career you've had. And I know that this book is going to reflect some of that those things as well as some important lessons. So Eric, thank you again for being our guest. And we look forward to seeing the next great things that you're doing.
Derek, thanks a lot for having me. I listen to Business Leadership Series myself and big fan, and I'm really happy to be here. I love what you're doing. It's a big service that you provide. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You too.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.